Timo, now we're seeing a comeback for Super Macho Man in the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out poll. Somebody was just like, hey, nobody's mentioning Super Macho Man. Now that's out there. And then, like, I'm not going to lie, I thought it was named after Randy Savage, too. But it was not. King Hippo was the early winner.
Mm.
Soto Popinski had his move. Ball Bull had a couple of people come in. But now we're starting to see a little bit more nuance. Sandman is popping out. I forgot Sandman even existed in the game. Great Tiger, I remember, because of that.
Von Kaiser.
Von Kaiser was number two. Nobody's mentioned Piston Honda.
I loved Piston Honda.
Piston, I did too, man.
Great uppercut.
Piston Honda had the first dance move when he rolled in.
Yeah.
Then he rolled into Don Flamenco, who you hated.
What?
But if you got clipped with that uppercut, you were going down.
Oh, yeah.
That's taken off also, by the way.
You just tweeted out,
man.
Of course,
Jason.
Yeah, exactly. Jason Martin, 11-year NFL veteran, Ramon Foster, Vol for Life, and Jonathan Schaefer here with you until 10 a.m. We bring in our good friend from The Athletic, Andy Staples, at Andy_Staples. Andy, I bet you have a Mike Tyson's Punch-Out take about your favorite non-Mike Tyson character in that game.
So I was a Sega Master System kid because I just had to be different. So I was playing Alex Kidd in the Lost Stars while my friends with NESs were playing Punch-Out. But, of course, I would, you know, beg to go over to their houses. And, you know, King Hippo, because that's kind of what I look like back then. So I had the right shape for it.
If they punch you in the stomach, did you also lose your shorts, Andy?
Occasionally.
So we saw this deal you and Ari were doing on the podcast, ranking the jobs in the SEC. And who was number one on your list as you guys were trying to come up with that list?
We both had Georgia number one. Now, we differed down the stretch, but we both had Georgia number one. If you gave Nick Saban a truth serum, he'd tell you Georgia's the best job in the SEC. He just happens to be the best coach of all time. And I think Alabama's number two. Already had LSU number two and Bama three. Honestly, I think the top six jobs in the SEC you can win the national title at. So if you're anywhere in the top three or four, you're doing fine. But Georgia, because of the built-in recruiting advantages that they have not necessarily taken advantage of yet. But it's like being Ohio State in Ohio if Ohio produced five or six times as many players as it does. And it's just it's a huge thing that you've seen Georgia now increase its talent base on the roster. Now they have to have the results to back it up. Now, I think you could argue if Nick Saban didn't coach Alabama, Georgia probably already has a national title under Kirby Smart. So is it because Kirby Smart's not getting it done, or is it because the greatest coach of all time is still in the league?
Yeah, that's because Nick Saban is still in the league. That's the easy take right there. As far as, you know, just Georgia switching head coach, was it from Mark Rich to
Rick?
To where they are right now. Have we seen a drastic change in just the production? If we're looking back over the two, since this is one of the best jobs to have in probably all of America. Again, everybody's poaching out of their backyard when it comes down to recruits. What is the difference in why they're always, you know, second up as far as the prom queen comes?
Well, right now it's Nick Saban. Because if Tua doesn't hit Devontae Smith on second and 26, Georgia won a national title 3 years ago or 4 years ago. We're not talking about this.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I mean, they're not that far off. 2018, they should have made the playoffs. That's their fault. They should have won the SEC championship game. You know, that's all on them. Don't let Jalen Hurts come in and beat you. You know, 2019, Alabama wasn't even the best team in the SEC. That was LSU. LSU had one of the best teams you've ever seen. So the problem is you're in the SEC, you're going to have to deal with that all the time.
Absolutely.
So I think Kirby Smart understands that. Now, as far as the difference between Kirby Smart and Mark Richt, we're going to find out, because Mark Richt had a red-hot start at Georgia. You know, he won the SEC in 2002. Won it again in 2005, and 2007, I'd say at the end of the season, that's probably his best team. So that was season seven for him. 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. Yeah. So Kirby's going into season six right now. Does he drop off? Does he stay at this level? Because Mark Richt, post 2007, they dropped. And they didn't really get back to what you wanted to see from them until 2012. And Kirby Smart will not get that kind of grace period. He's going to have to stay at this level the entire time and eventually break through.
Andy, why did Ari rank Kentucky over A&M? What was the rationale for that?
And Auburn. He ranked them over Auburn, too. So he did not have the same criteria I did. Mine, one of the criterion, or one of the criteria had to be you have to be able to win a national title, or I'm not putting a school that's not going to be able to win a national title above one that has the raw materials to do it. So I had Kentucky below all the schools I thought would win the national title, but he didn't. His reasoning, and I don't disagree with this necessarily, is that in terms of happiness and quality of life, it's the best job. Mm. Like, if you're Kirby Smart and you win 8 games a year, you're fired. Mm. If you're Nick Saban and you win 8 games a year, you're fired. If you're Mark Stoops and you win 8 games a year, they might build a statue of you, and they'll keep giving you raises.
Well, do you think that also quality of life goes to Gus Malzahn's decision at UCF? Just going there where, look, they care about offense. He has the unique offense. He doesn't necessarily have to spend quite as much time dealing with the SEC recruiting grinder, and he has the ability to go in there and win 9 games, and they're not going to be particularly upset with that, where if you win 9 at Auburn, they want you gone.
They'll be extremely upset at that. That's the difference between UCF and Kentucky. If he's not winning double-digit games every year, they're not going to like it.
Because they've gotten used to it now because of Frost and Heupel?
They've not even gotten used to it. They've always had that. Everybody thinks that 0-12 year was something that was normal in the past. That was the anomaly. That was everybody checking out on George O'Leary.
Yeah, that's true. George O'Leary.
They made a New Year's Six Bowl with their last 3 coaches. So they have everything in place to be great in that league every year. And they know it. The fan base knows it. So, but the difference is, you don't have to play Alabama. You don't have to play Georgia. You don't have to play them both in the same month like Gus Malzahn always did. You know, it's a little different when you got Cincinnati and Navy. And, yeah, those are tough teams, but they're not the same caliber as Alabama, LSU, and Auburn.
So where, when you rank this, because I haven't gotten to hear the full podcast yet, did you rank every job in the SEC, or did you just do?
Yeah.
Okay, so where is Tennessee as I stare at Ramon?
So I had Tennessee number 7, and Ari had them at, like, number 12. He's saying just because of the recent situation where you got NCAA sanctions, and it's just below everything else right now. And I don't disagree with that either, but I think long-term, if you look at where Tennessee is from a geographic standpoint, because a lot of what I do is based on just how available are recruits to you. Can you get recruits to drive to you on unofficial visits? Can you get them to see your campus a bunch? Can you get them to get to know your football program? And at Tennessee, you have that capability. You're 3 hours from Atlanta. Nashville is the next American population boom town, as you guys know when you drive in traffic every day. You know, Charlotte's not far away. In the Fulmer era, I mean, they were getting kids out of Virginia. So it's not like you can't get people to your campus. You can't get people to fall in love with you. You can do that at Tennessee. Now, is it easy? No, it's not as easy as Alabama, as Georgia, as LSU. But it's not like you can't get good players there. And they can be the third best team in the East consistently, and then some years be the second best or the best team in the East, if they're doing it right. Now, the problem is, like, if you're Josh Heupel coming into this situation, you're going to be hamstrung by some other stuff. And you're just going to have to fight your way through that. I do hope, and I have no idea if this is true or not, but I do hope, because of the situation Josh Heupel walked into, that they actually give the guy some time. Because I feel like that's the thing at Tennessee, is it you're always sitting there waiting for the axe to fall, and nobody ever feels like they can build anything.
Yeah. Just, okay, you're a guy who's been very real about University of Tennessee, just in college football as a whole. We had the whole debate about my 8-2 thing. We've gotten over that for the most part, Andy. I appreciate you letting me slide.
It wasn't really much of a debate. I mean, Tennessee sort of settled it for us.
They did. But what does this hire do for you with Heupel at Tennessee? It seems to me he's addressed the issues that everybody said he had a problem with. That's recruiting. That's defense. That's, you know, just everything that was a knock. He seems to have hired the guys to get him in a position to make this successful. Is that where you stand?
Well, we'll see. I mean, You mean because the stories you're reading all say all nice things about all those guys?
No, of course.
You read the stories about the new staff in Michigan, they say that too. That's, you're not going to say mean things about people you just met. So, but we don't know that. We have no idea if they're going to succeed there. And it, I know that's not a good talk radio answer, but the fact of the matter is hiring coaches is a complete crapshoot. A lot of it has to do with chemistry. A lot of it has to do with right place, right? Like when Josh Heupel got hired at UCF, my reaction was, oh, God, what are they doing? And guess what? He was pretty good there. So it's like you just never know.
Also this, when it comes to kids committing to schools early, like junior, sophomore year, how much stock does that hold? Do you know how often those kids stick with those original schools? Right now with the protocol, it's almost like you can make the mistake and hop back out whenever you want to. Is that what's happening now more and more with the age of committing early or doing it on your social media?
Depends on the position. Okay. If you're a quarterback and you commit, you're probably not going to flip unless there's a coaching change or unless the school cuts you loose. For other positions, it's different. But the other thing you got to remember is half the time when a player says he's decommitting from somewhere, it's because the school has called him and said, we don't want you in this class anymore.
Mm.
And we're gonna give you, you know, a way out of this. You say you decommitted, we won't badmouth you, and you can go find another school. But that's the part people never consider, is that sometimes when players are decommitting, it's because they got cut loose out of a class.
When you look at somebody like Ty Simpson, for example, and Ramon was saying, hey, you know, his mentality is different than mine because I'd want to go and play. He's committing early to go at a school where my argument was, well, he's going to get his opportunity. I mean, look at Mac Jones. All he needed was a year, and he's going to be a first-round draft pick behind everything else that's going on. Same thing with the running backs. They have a fleet of them. Yep. They got three or four of them sitting on the bench. Eventually, Najee's going to get into the game. Is that why, if you're a top guy, you're still going to Bama, even knowing you might have to sit for a year or two?
Well, that's what I want as my quarterback, the guy who doesn't care what the competition is.
Mm.
So I'm going anyway. That's Mac Jones. That's exactly what Mac Jones said. Let me lay out the scenario for when Mac Jones committed to Alabama. Jalen Hurts has just arrived on campus. He's gone through a spring practice. He's not the starter yet because he's a true freshman. Remember, they started Blake Barnett that first game, then brought Jalen Hurts in, and he's the starter the rest of the way. Becomes the SEC Freshman of the Year, SEC Offensive Player of the Year as a freshman. And so that guy's on campus already. Tua has just committed like 3 weeks earlier. So and Tua was as big of a legend in recruiting as he was when he got to Alabama. So everybody knew who he was. And so Mac Jones, who was committed to Kentucky, is in Nick Saban's office and is offered a scholarship, knowing all this, and says, sounds good to me. I don't care who you got. I'm going to come play. And that is the attitude you want in your quarterback. That's the right attitude to have. Now, you still may have to transfer because somebody might be better, but at least you gave yourself a chance to compete against the best. And I like that idea. I mean, I like that attitude. It's a little bit different with the other positions because you can say, you know, I don't care who I have to compete against. You still can probably get on the field early. At quarterback, if you get shut out, you get shut out.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that somebody's willing to roll the dice on themselves. And look, how much are they really rolling the dice in this day and age? If he comes and let's say Bryce Young turns out to be amazing and Bryce Young's going to be a three-year starter there, well, maybe he transfers after a year. You just have to look at it like that. It's not the permanent thing that it always was, especially not with quarterbacks. Mm. With quarterbacks, especially highly rated quarterbacks, the expectation is they're going to transfer. What is it? You know, 60% of all marriages end in divorce. It's sort of the same thing for 4- and 5-star quarterbacks. Half of them or more are going to transfer. It's just fact of life.
Does LSU bounce back this year?
Yes, they do. Mm. I think they've made the correct, you know, moves on the staff to deal with the mistakes they made last year. They looked at what happened in 2019 and said, we're losing these coaches. Let's hire people who aren't anything like them, which is silly. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you try to hire people who fit what you were doing then? Because that really worked. And that's what they've done. If you look at the guys they've hired, like Jake Peets, the offensive coordinator, he worked with Joe Brady this year at Carolina. So he's a guy who knows what they were running back in 2019 that worked. The other thing about them that I think is interesting, you know, you look at when did they play their best last year? Sort of when everybody was gone. Yeah. You know, they, remember how they Jamar Chase opts out right before the start of the season.
Yeah.
You had the deal with Eric Gilbert. He leaves. You know, they had another receiver leave in mid-year. And Gilbert left right before the Florida game. That crew that came to Gainesville was kind of the ones that were all bought in. And what did they do? Upset of the season. And then they played well the rest of the way out. So I think, you know, if you look at the way that season went, take away the horrific mistakes of hiring, you know, Bo Pelini and Scott Linehan, and put some coaches in there that are more similar to what you had success with, and then you have a very talented team that's not losing much. You know, if you look at 2018 and 2019, LSU didn't have any guys drafted. Mm. And any year where LSU does not have many guys drafted, watch out the next year. Because you know they always have talent on that roster.
Andy, last week we derailed ourselves and ended up doing a poll all week about the worst guy. And we're, you know, stereotyping.
That
yeah, that guy. And we're doing that girl this week. And we're having to tread very lightly and let kind of the females
yeah.
dominate it. But
well,
what,
you,
go ahead.
You need to bring in somebody, you know, bring in Dawn from the afternoon
yeah.
show, and get, you need a woman's perspective on this, because what they're annoyed by and what we're annoyed by are two completely different things.
That's definitely right. Plus, we want to go ahead and put out that disclaimer again. Keisha, Ramon's wife,
yes.
Abby, my wife, perfect women in every way, not classified in any way. But what's the that guy that irritates you, Andy? We figured you'd have a phenomenal answer.
Well, I saw Ramon's that guy, or people have been sending Ramon that guys on Twitter. And there was one they sent him yesterday of pickup truck can't park guy. And I got to admit that when I am a first time pickup truck owner, I've had it now for 2 years, so I've kind of gotten used to it. But that first few months I had a truck for the first time, I could not park the damn thing. I was that guy, and I'm sorry to everyone. But my that guy is, I don't mind if you do curls in the squat rack. I don't mind it. What I mind is you leave the bar down on the bottom of the squat rack
yep.
with your little baby weights on it and walk away. That I mind.
I know that feeling. Or if somebody is actually doing something heavy, like they're doing clean jerks, and they leave a heavy bar, and you got to, like, take all the weights
yeah,
off.
Don't make me undress your bar.
Oh.
How do you feel about a full gallon milk jug filled with water guy at the gym as well? Because we got into several. We felt like we could have an entire category with gym guys because there's so many different ones.
I'm all right with that. I understand why they're doing it. The one guy, now this guy doesn't exist anymore because nobody reads the print newspaper anymore, but back in the day, there was a guy in my old gym who would read the newspaper between sets on the leg press. And it was the only leg press.
You see? That's two guys that want to take up too much time on the press and a guy that's doing too much while on the press. That sucks.
Now, I always took that as a just go do squats, Andy. Stop worrying about the leg press.
What about slam weights guy? Guy that slams him down to make sure you know what he's doing.
At my gym, I feel like there's a sort of an unspoken code. It's not like one of those where they have the lunk alarm or anything like that. But you just don't do that. You just don't make the cry and drop your weight. It's not right. Now, the weights are on the second floor, so people, I think, are probably thinking courteously, like, hey, the I don't want the floor to give out from under me, so I don't want to drop this thing, because if you drop it too many times, you have a problem here.
Right.
Now, before we let you go, the other thing that we were just talking about like 20 minutes ago was stores that we were sure were going to be around that were just totally off the bank, just like full all the time, that now don't exist. We're talking about like Radio Shack and stuff like that. Is there one that comes to mind that just...
I miss Radio Shack so much.
Yeah. I mean, it was always the same too, Andy. It was always like the same Ziploc bag with like the cardboard topper with the staples.
Yeah. But they had every connector you could possibly need.
Yep.
Like, I need a headphone jack that goes into a larger headphone jack. And on the other side, it has two sets of RCA plugs, and it's got the red and the white and the yellow. And they had it. They always had it.
The other thing I was joking about was because I think Ramon asked if AOL was still around. And I was like, it's kept alive by 60-year-old sports writers that still have AOL.com as their email address. Do you know anybody still with an AOL email address?
I could name a few.
I could too.
I was a Gmail early adopter, man, so don't look at me. But yes, there are a few who still cling to the old, you've got mail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Moan, there's some that just won't give it up. You've still got a Yahoo address, though. At least that's a couple of years newer.
I mean, I'm still rocking with Yahoo. It's my main. You know what? I'm rocking with it. Screw it.
It's all right, Ramon. Yeah. It's a first world thing. You should have somebody underneath you that's handling that for you, right?
No, I don't get paid enough for that.
There you go. Andy, man, we appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. That's Andy Staples of The Athletic. Yeah, Radio Shack. The problem with the Radio Shack deal was I always felt stupid being in there.
Really?
Because 95% of the Radio Shack, I didn't understand what it was.
Nope.
Those connectors and stuff, I'm like, I bet you that goes in... some kind of electronic device.
Yep, that's all you got. That's all you got.
I roll in with Dad, and he'd buy like three or four different things, and I'm like, you don't know what you're doing. I have to rewind tapes for you. When I tell you that you need to record and watch something at the same time, you got to hit record and play together.
Yeah.
I had to explain that to you like once a week for 3 or 4 years. We need to get out of Radio Shack is what we need to do.
Don't do your dad like
Radio that, Yurt. J. Martin Ramon, we'll be right back to finish up the program, get you the poll results. Who is the worst girl in the Tuesday poll? We got so many comments. We may just sit here and read them when we come back. Don't miss it. J. Martin Ramon, 104.5 The Zone.
Can't wait.